if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod. And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm a freak Nemertine. I don't know what that is, but hey, I'm one.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. Again, as always, we are discussing two more episodes of Sliders. So this week it is Paradise Lost and The Last of Eden. Bit of a theme in the names there, really.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so episode one today, Paradise Lost, written by Stephen Stollier and directed by Jim Johnston. This originally aired on January 31st of 1997.
They don't get many tourists here because of the beach. It's never open.
You got any money to get something to eat?
Not here. Problem solved.
Ah, waiting in a restaurant, yeah. Chopping lettuce, washing dishes, taking orders from awful people.
Looking for work?
Yeah, you're the manager?
Huh. Manager, owner, waiter, and cook. Which is why I could use some help around here. I have two openings.
My friend here, Mr. Brown, actually cooked in the Navy.
And wait, didn't you wait tables back in high school?
Thanks for remembering.
Okay, then. Let's get you started.
We'll do the menial work in the next world.
Next two worlds.
We start with a geologist reporting to a colleague that he's found some kind of weird seismic activity underground. He is then attacked by two men who throw him over a small cliff into a ditch and is immediately pursued and dragged underground by what appears to be a snake-like creature. The next day, our sliders slide in and Quinn sees a man with a crowbar sneakily coming up behind a woman, Lori, changing her tire. The man leaves and the woman explains she is here to find her assistant and gives our heroes a ride into town. Remy and Wade get jobs at the local diner while Quinn and Lori confront the lazy sheriff about finding her assistant, but he is called away on an emergency, so Quinn volunteers their help. Together, the two find her assistant's evidence and are confused by the seismic activity they see underground. They find a tractor half submerged in the ground at the source of the seismic activity, the driver missing, his hat on the ground, and a strange blue substance beside it. Meanwhile, we begin to see strange things around town, such as a dead local and the sheriff telling another local that her appetite is getting bigger and we need to feed her more, explaining that our group will do just fine for that. We see a group of kids scared to go on the grass to play, mesmerized when Quinn walks onto the said grass to retrieve their ball, not seeing the trail of the underground creature behind him. Arturo notices a picture of the front desk hotel woman that dates to 1941, but she explains that the woman is actually her grandmother. They just look alike. In the diner, a young waiter collapses, but Remy is pushed away from helping. As the locals surround the waiter, we see the man on the floor is no longer young, but very elderly. Arturo gets more information at the bar from one of the drunk locals who tells him about the beast that took his arm off. They are interrupted by the sheriff who tells him that Wade has been found dead at the beach, but he learns fast that it was a trap as the sheriff pulls the ladder up, leaving Arturo to be captured by the beast pulled underground. Despite warnings from a woman named Trudy, Wade gets involved with a local man named Parker, much to the chagrin of the hotel desk clerk. Wade ends up spying on a town meeting, learning that the people here recite a vow in worship of the creature that gives them the blue residue. Parker catches her and holds her captive. Trudy plays the part of extraordinary exposition extra, using the 30 seconds that Parker leaves the room to tell her that the beast is the result of an explosion in the town's uranium mine years ago and requires human flesh to feed, leaving behind a waste product that gives eternal youth. Remy tries to find Arturo and Wade, but is knocked out and locked in jail by the sheriff before being rescued by Quinn and Lori. Wade manages to escape from Parker, but the sheriff grabs her and takes her back inside. Parker and the sheriff have a fight about needing the council's permission to feed Wade, and in the end, the sheriff shoots Parker, who suddenly ages from young to old. Quinn, Lori, and Remy arrive, and Trudy tells them that Arturo and Lori's assistant could still be alive in the creature's cave. They go to search for the cave, but Lori is dragged underground by the creature. The three sliders develop a plan to blow up the creature and narrowly escape the sheriff showing up to shoot at them. They discover the creature is spawning, which is why it's been feeding more, and Quinn and Wade rescue the professor and Lori, set the charges to blow up the creature and the nursery, escape the pursuing sheriff who is eaten by the creature before the charges explode, and bid Lori a farewell as they slide out.
We pray their souls are at peace. We vow to keep the secret. We vow to keep the silence.
Well, I'm not sure why she's feeding so much, but let's hope she calms a bit. The good news is, the more she eats, the more of the gift she leaves us.
One other note. Y'all know we lost Tom Cooper at the restaurant today.
He lived a good life, all 103 years of it. Let's take a moment for him. Okay, let's eat. Slow down, slow down, don't waste it. Every drop is precious.
Okay, so let's get into a bit of trivia here.
All right, so the beginning, when they first arrive on the world, there were some extra lines, and one of the lines was about how they said the slides, when they arrive, they feel different, and they can't really explain why, but the slide landings are just different now. And we'll talk about that in the discussion, but it was an extra line or two that they cut out. There was supposed to be the scene where they meet up with Lori for the very first time. We were supposed to see Bud driving in, and they were going to show him driving on the left side of the road to indicate that they weren't home yet, you know, because normally he'd be driving on the right side of the road in America. So right. it was supposed to show, you know, that they're in a totally different world, another dimension. When Quinn goes on the grass to get the soccer ball, Fred, the drunk guy from later, is supposed to appear from off to the side saying, "Hey, what are you doing? Get off that grass, you crazy." And Quinn's like, "What's the big deal?" And Fred suddenly backtracks and he's like, "Oh, well, there was a water main break on there. You don't want to, you might fall into the little, you know, the little watery hole area or whatever." So yeah, this cut for time, I'm sure. There was something about when Wade, Remy, and Arturo are sitting at the diner on break. There was a line that Remy's talking about being on tour in Florida. And actually the name of the town he mentioned is actually Sabrina Lloyd's hometown, from what I found out, which that's kind of cool. But for some reason, Remy could not get through that line, without laughing. I don't know why, cause I looked at it and I'm like, there's nothing real funny here. And I even checked, they referenced the gag reel, on the Sliders DVD, and he does laugh during it, but I'm like, I can't figure out why. There's nothing real funny in the actual, scene, and all they said on Dimension of Continuity was that they had to alter that scene a little bit because Clavant could not deliver the line without laughing, so they had to change it up a little bit. So you can check that out at dimensionofcontinuity.com if you want to see. It's not that much different. It's just for some reason they had to alter it just the slightest bit because he was just laughing like crazy. I don't know.
Maybe just one of those days on set.
Yeah, you know? There was a scene where Remy comes in and sees Wade getting ready to go out for a walk, you know, to find Parker because she was, you know, interested in him. And she's like primping at the mirror or whatever, getting her clothes ready and her hair. And he's like, you're getting all fixed up, you know? And she's like, I'm just going out for a walk. He's like, yeah, okay, whatever. So there was also this episode and the next episode, I'm going to mention this, but in this one, Quinn says that the creature is a Nemertine, you know, as I said at the beginning of the episode. Originally, in the original idea, he was not going to say Nemertine. He was going to say it looks like a – it's a hard word. It's an acanthocephalon, all right? And I was like, what the heck is that, acanthocephalon? I looked it up, and it's apparently some kind of human parasite. So there you go. That was the original version of the worm. And again, this will come up when we get to the discussion. Yeah. Remy, there was a scene with Remy showing Wade how to arm the charges. You know, he was saying like, you know, wrap this around here, da da da, just a little extra stuff not really needed. A conversation with Sheriff, and I think it was Bud, saying that they need to go after the sliders because we got to protect the creature. You know, obviously, because if they don't, you know, the creature dies, then they're going to, you know, eventually die as well. The biggest thing is that in the original script, Laurie's assistant, Michael, didn't die. He was going to be, you know, cocooned just like Laurie and the professor were. So big change there.
Yeah.
And then I thought this was kind of cool. Laurie says at the end of the episode, you know, like they ask her if she wants to come with them or something like that. And she's like, no, you know, I know a guy. She said, I'm going to stay here and take care of this. She goes, I know a guy at the FBI who investigates things just like this. And it was supposed to be a throw out to the X-Files, to David Duchovny's character, Mulder.
Didn't we talk about how, like, people were calling for a Sliders X-Files crossover at one point?
Yes.
Earlier in the series?
Mm-hmm. And there's a Messages in Time, I think, if I remember correctly, if I put it in there. There's a Messages in Time, yeah, about this episode and the X-Files. So we'll get to that. And then finally, this episode was supposed to have another tag ending at the very end. And the sliders were going to end up on a beach again, just like they started the episode. They were going to land on a beach, only this time it was supposed to be a tropical beach, and they were actually going to be there for 2 weeks for rest and relaxation. And like they landed on the beach, and they see all these like guys with like look like natives or something running at them, but they're just playing. They're not like attacking them. And then there's like, you know, island girls off to the side or something. So it was supposed to be a nice little happy ending, I guess, for them to finally have some chance just to relax.
Yeah, we've seen that before, though.
Yeah,
I think it was
exactly.
Yeah, it was after Arturo was running for mayor in the
female
domination world, and he had to be Wade's slave or something while they're on the beach.
Exactly.
The creature needs human flesh to keep alive. They feed it drifters, criminals, outcasts, anyone who nobody will miss.
They fed him?
Years ago, this town was nothing but a uranium mine. We had a huge explosion in the hole. It killed 50 people, but it also created a mutant beast. Parker was actually trying to kill it when he discovered that it left something behind. Something that helps people live a long time and keeps them young until the day they die.
That disgusting stuff they were eating? Trudy, please help me. I need to get out of here. Please.
There's nowhere for you to go. Either you become one of us, Wade, or you'll be sacrificed with the others. You choose this, and you choose to be young for the rest of your life.
You may look young, Parker, but inside you are as old and decrepit as I look. And every time you feed someone to that beast, you make one step closer to hell.
Don't start with me.
At least when I finally die, I won't have the blood of innocent people on my conscience or my hands.
You fool! This is a gift, and I am not going to waste it like you. Eat.
Why are you doing this?
I want you to stay with me.
He wants a new wife, someone to replace me.
Okay, so let's get into our discussion.
All right, so the first thing they do, which is great that they did this, they mention that they have a new timer, and the Egyptian timer. But here's the thing that I didn't get. They specifically call this out, and they said it in the deleted scenes, but they left part of it in there in the actual episode as well. They talk about how the landings suck with this new timer. And Quinn says, I'll keep adjusting it until it works out. And I'm thinking to myself, most of their landings have always sucked. You know, it's like very rarely do they just land on their feet. I'm like, what are they talking about?
I don't know. I guess maybe it's just a bit jerkier than usual. Like, even more than the original timer?
I suppose it could be. I just, like, when they said that, I was like, what do you mean? You've fallen plenty of times, you know? It's like, this is not a new thing. And so, I don't know. It was just, it was odd to me when they said that.
And I do love that, you know, as they pan across them all, Remy's got sand on his face, and then Wade does, and then Quinn does. Arturo doesn't.
He doesn't? I didn't notice that.
Yeah, it's going back to that whole thing where I'm betting John Rhys Davies is like, I am not sticking my face in the sand and getting sand all in my face. Nice I blended in garbage. Right. No, it's enough.
That's good. It's awesome. Nice catch. Nice catch.
But, you know, we get, you know, it's a bit of a slow burn on this episode, but, you know, I'm just going to call it out here. This is pretty much Tremors, right?
Yes, it is. Totally.
You have seen Tremors, I'm assuming.
Oh, yes. I saw that and, like, was there... Well, just one sequel or there's another one? I know I saw one of the sequels.
Two sequels, and I think there's a fourth one coming out.
Oh, my God.
I saw that a couple of months ago, so it could already be out. I'm not sure.
And Kevin Bacon was not involved in any of the sequels, right?
No.
All right, see, he was smart.
But yeah, and the town they're heading to here is called Paradise. And in Tremors, the town is called Perfection, so...
Oh, see, I forgot that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, nice. So it's quite obvious. They, quote-unquote tribute, as
God,
we
they
say.
Really hit these things on the head, you know? It's like they really hammer it home. They couldn't be just a little more original, but no, they don't even want to hide it.
Yeah. And as it starts off, when we've got this guy, Michael, who is some sort of seismologist or something, we kind of just see that he has a lot of equipment there and he's doing some sort of test and he's discovered something. And instantly, all these people from town kidnap him and throw him down onto this little beach over a bluff there. And he gets eaten by some underground creature, right? And all the locals, right? Because there's that one dude, and we see him again once the sliders come in.
Right.
But he comes off as like a real, like, redneck, you know, with his red cap and, you know, run, boy, run. And once we get into the town, like, he's the only person who's like that.
Yes.
I'm just like, where did this random redneck come from? And you think, after all these years, because he's an old man, like, everybody there, they are extremely old.
Yes.
You think he would have, you know, I don't know, grown beyond something like that? Like, spend your time wisely in life.
Yeah, like, and the influence of people around you. Like, when you spend time with people around you, like, you tend to change a little bit. You know, like, your behavior changes. Even your accent can change. You know, like, if you go, you know, like, you go to, like, if you go to Australia, if I spent years and years and years in Australia, eventually I might develop a little bit of that accent, you know?
Yeah, exactly right. I've actually got a kind of a muddled accent myself.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I grew up in Australia, but both of my parents are British. And then, of course, I've spent a lot of time around American people watching American films. So I've kind of got this weird muddled accent myself.
Mm-hmm.
It rubs off on you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I didn't like that guy. And then, you know, once the sliders come in, again, we've got a woman in peril.
Yes.
Because that seems to kick off every story in sliders.
Of course.
It's a woman. At least she wasn't actually attacked. She was moments away from being attacked. But, of course, Quinn just comes in with his macho self. Hey, get away from her.
Exactly.
Because redneck dude, all he can think of is to smack her across the head or something. I don't know. Whatever he's going to do there. And then, right, she apparently has a flat tire.
Yes.
And Quinn is like, well, let me help you with your flat tire. And he sort of puts the bar on there. And it looks like he tightens a nut for about a half a second. Yeah. He's just like, oh, there you go. All fixed. I'm like, so pretty much the job was already done when you came along. So
I know, yeah. Didn't he say something about do a world record or something? Yeah. Tire changer? Yeah.
Okay. You would expect he would have to take off the tire, put on a new one, you know, do that in about 30 seconds or something because he's the world record. But really, watching it back, I'm like, he really does nothing there. He tightens one nut.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense either because, like, I don't know, like, she needs a tire change, but it's basically, like you said, basically already done, doesn't do anything at all. Why didn't she have, like, the crowbar there with her to tighten those nuts? She's just tightened them by hand. And then he shows, you know, Bud or whoever, I think it was Bud, shows up with the crowbar. Like, why didn't he have it? Why didn't she have it with him or with her when she was tightening the lugs? It's like, yeah, just doing it by hand. Like, all right, whatever.
Maybe it's like the initial stage or something. Like, she screwed them on, but she was going to tighten them.
I guess.
And that was Quinn's contribution. Because she's a woman and she couldn't possibly tighten a nut on a wheel.
Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, man, I'm poking fun here.
Right.
But it is setting up like a really good aesthetic, I think. You know, just this, yeah, they're on a beach, but it's this like dreary, windy town and stuff like that. So I like the theme that they're setting up here. There's something not quite right.
Yeah.
And I get that from the get-go. You know, when the guys head into town and they see, you know, all the people like looking at them sideways. And they pretty easily get jobs.
Yeah, very
Which was a good scene, you know, about how Wade and Remy kind of fit the jobs that are there. So you guys take it.
Exactly.
And Wade's bargaining that, well, the next two worlds.
You do the menial work, yeah.
Yeah, and then we get the menacing warning from this old woman, Trudy. And this is where it really makes you think, this isn't boding well for our sliders.
Right. Now, the thing that I don't get is why Trudy is even still there. You know, they have this old woman just hanging out there with them. You know, obviously she's, you know, we find out she's Parker's wife. But, like, she's there and she warns people. She gives up information to people who are coming in to get out. It's like, you know, it's like these guys are not the nicest people in this town, you know? Why don't they just, like get rid of her? Like, not necessarily kill her, but send her off somewhere away from the town so they can just live on their own, you know? I mean, obviously she might tell other people outside of town, but, like, why don't they do something to silence her? Because she just, she warns them about what's going on. If she didn't warn them, they might be okay. They might have, well, not be okay, but they might have easily been taken by the locals.
It is a bit weird later, you know, after he's got Wade there.
Mm-hmm.
And Trudy, like you said in the summary there, becomes uber exposition extra. And
oh my God, amazing. Right.
I kept thinking, like, he obviously kept his wife around because he does love her.
Right.
Yet he wants to tie up Wade and force feed her to make her be in love with him and stay with him forever. I'm like, well, why has he done this to Trudy? Like,
yes.
When she refused to eat the stuff, why didn't he go all weirdo caca over her? Tie her up and force feed it to her. I don't know. They're not going to explain this, but whatever.
No, they're not. But, you know, speaking of that, since we mentioned it, there is this episode had a big line that was messed up and they did not fix it, which is just strange. And, like, you probably didn't even notice. It just went by. You just assumed that it was what he said. But Parker says to Wade, you know what, Wade? If you become one of us, you'll be sacrificed. Like, he wants to give her the food. He's like, if you become one of us, you'll be sacrificed. It was supposed to be, if you don't become one of us, you'll be sacrificed. But they left it in.
Right.
So it kind of like, if you read it the way he says it, it doesn't make sense because it's like, you know, like, okay, yeah, eat this and you'll be young forever and then you're going to be sacrificed too. That's like, no, that's not a good deal, Parker. And even the captions, I checked the captions. The captions do say, if you don't become one of us. So the actor delivered it wrong and they didn't think, let's go back and fix that. You know, maybe because of budget, because of time, they said, just leave it in. It's fine. You know, for whatever reason.
You can imagine it was somebody's job to write up the captioning for this episode. Mm-hmm. They probably stopped at that point and like played the line back like a dozen times. And they're like, that doesn't make sense. I'm just going to put the word don't in there.
exactly. That could be.
But yeah, so the whole thing is that there was this creature that came about from some sort of nuclear waste or something.
Yeah, there was a uranium mine.
And it eats people and leaves behind this weird blue goo that they call the gift. And they seem to, like, worship it.
Yes.
Like, even more so than the creature itself. They worship the stuff and that they eat it. And they stay young. So when they get to like a scene where it's like eating some guy who was just watering his lawn or something and all the blue goo's there, he like orders like redneck dude to scrape it all up. And the dude's got like a filthy pallet and an old dirty bucket to scrape it into.
Yes, exactly.
And I was just like, yeah, man, like, I understand, like, it's on the ground and it's, like, on the mud and stuff like that, but you think you'd have, like, a, you know, a nice bowl or something to put it into. You don't want to make it even more dirtier than it is if you're going to go ahead and eat it.
I wonder how they purify it, too, because it is, like, in the mud and, like, dirt, and it's like, ugh, that just looks gross. Yeah. And then, like, the thing I was thinking of, you know, later on when they're eating it, as the whole community together is eating it, like, they're using their hands. They're just reaching into the bowl and just shove it into their mouth with their hands. Do they not have forks, you know, spoons, some kind of utensil, you know? If it's so, like, if this is so valuable, what, they're just, like, you know, grabbing at it with their hands. It's getting all over them, their fingernails. Every last drop is precious, remember? But it's, like, all over the place. It's, like, this is not the best way to eat, you know, people.
Yeah, it's like some sort of like dramatic license where they're just like, oh, it'll seem more menacing that they're eating this stuff if they're doing it with their hands.
Now, here's the thing that I thought about, and a lot of other people thought about it too. Who was the first person who saw this worm shit and said, you know what? I think that's going to keep us young. Let's eat it. who was the first person to say, let's do this, you know? And it's not like it's an automatic thing where automatically you feel young. It takes a while. So they had to taste it and then keep tasting it over a long period and then decide, oh yeah, this does keep us young. Look at that. It's a good thing. It's a good thing we did this.
Well, like, if I could play devil's advocate for this here, it's really not that different to somebody looking at a cow and going, you know what? I'm going to squeeze that cow's udders. I'm going to drink whatever comes out of it.
Okay. All right. But here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. Like, if we go into it, all right, you've got, like, the whole idea of, like, women being pregnant, okay? And when they are, they produce milk.
Right.
So if you kind of apply that to, like, oh, well, you know, here's a cow. It's a female cow. That kind of looks like, you know, I wonder. You know, I mean, we're really going off here. But, you know, I just there's at least some like, precedent for the cow's udders and a woman being pregnant and producing milk. But worm crap? You know, like, is there precedent for that? Do people eat crap? And, you know, it's, I don't think so.
And it's hard to say that they, like, collected it up and tested it or anything before they ate it or something like that. Because if you follow the timeline, like, they say, like, that one guy in the diner who died was, like, 103 or something like that. So I guess it could slightly prolong your life. You know, people have lived to 103 before, but it made you look young. So it's hard to say whether or not it is prolonging your life or if it's just keeping you looking young.
Maybe it's like just a really good, like, L'Oreal skin cream, you know? And it just takes away your wrinkles, you know, your shadows under your eyes. But that's all it is.
Yeah, if you follow that timeline, so this is 1997, so you could think 103, you know, maybe they were a bit older than that. So you're looking at the early 1900s when this started to happen.
Right.
It's hard to say that they would have had the expertise or the people within that small town to test it and figure out what it is. It does seem like they just saw it there and thought, all right, let's start eating this. It is.
Yeah, I was just like, what? I don't know. It was just, I was like, how did they discover this? We just accept it. We move on.
Yes. Okay, so they get into the whole thing about how Michael was there, you know, trying to figure out all the seismic activity. Like, that's the reason he was there. Mm-hmm. And Laurie is there to pretty much find him and find out what happened. So when they go over to his tent, all his equipment is still set up because they killed him but just left his crap there.
Yes.
And she rings up, like, the info on the computer and starts talking about, like, faxing stuff.
Right.
And I was like, is that how computers worked in 97? I'm pretty sure by 97 you could email someone.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Why would you set your laptop up to a fax machine and then fax stuff to people?
Right.
I don't know.
No, I don't remember. I know 97, let's see. 97, I was graduating from college. And yeah, I think I may have had, did we have school? I may have had school email. I'm trying to remember now. Maybe just be, you know what? I didn't actually have my own computer until like 99, I think. So it's possible that I know they had email. I know people had email, but my friends did. Maybe it just wasn't as commonplace in 97, perhaps. Maybe that's why they had the fax machine.
It's a good point. Because I was trying to get into that mindset of 97 too. So I was thinking, well, he'd at least have to have a phone line in order to send a fax.
Right.
So you think
right.
he could use that phone line to get his dial-up internet.
Right.
right. And he had right. a cell phone. Like, all his stuff there seemed like pretty technologically advanced. I think he would have been set up to send an email.
Yeah.
I just had a laugh when they started talking about fax machines.
Right. Now, this goes, I think this is a little bit later, but it's, again, with Quinn and Lori. Like, they mention, like, she says something like, do you hear that? It's like, it sounds like drums. And, like, they never really referenced it again, but it was like, they never, like, what were the drums all about? Like, was it related to the creature, or what was going on? Like, they never talked about it again. It was just there for that one scene. It was like a nighttime scene. They're like, you hear that? I hear drums. And like, okay, I don't know what that has to do with anything.
I actually do remember that. And honestly, I immediately forgot it because they'd never bring it up again.
Right. I just, like, if they hadn't said anything about it, I would just assumed it was the music in the background, you know, like the score.
I don't know. I guess it might have been like the creature traveling underground or something.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know.
Anyway. Well, in any case, we got Arturo getting his drunk on.
with the one-armed man, Fred.
Yeah. Right. The one-armed man. That was a good little scene.
Yeah, I didn't mind it, you know, because like Remy had come up with the whole story about how he was locked in a bar in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is the apparently the funny story that Clavon couldn't get through.
Right. Yes.
It was a hurricane. He was locked in the bar, and then by the end of the night, he kind of just knew all the stuff that was going on in town,
mm-hmm. you know,
the big secrets and the affairs and whatever.
Yeah.
Not a funny story, but it does send Arturo to the bar where he meets Fred, and Fred right. just blurts out something about the creature, and then immediately just backtracks on it. He's like, ah, whatever.
Yeah, don't say anything. Don't say anything.
But yeah, it was a good little scene. I'm not sure John Rhys Davies was really putting his all into the scene.
You don't think?
No.
No.
When he's just walking, he sort of had his head down. He's just like, I love yeah, you too,
Fred. Gotta agree.
Yeah, he checked out for the day, I think, by the time they shot that scene.
We have later on. Now, again, we have Quinn and we have Wade and we have Remy go to rescue the professor. Now I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but it's where I put this here, so I was just talking about it. We got Quinn, Wade, and Remy going to save Arturo, and Quinn goes in and he sees the worm and he comes back out and, you know, did you see it? You know, and he's like, yeah, it must be a freak Nemertine. And Remy's like, is that shorthand or is that longhand for, you know, big ass worm or something like that?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, it is. And like, I looked it up, you know, I looked up to see what a Nemertine was. And it's like, it's some kind of worm that lives in freshwater. So they're on the beach, which is not freshwater, you know, that's saltwater. So that didn't really make sense to me, and they said they like cool, damp places. So definitely not the beach, but I guess it is rainy there. It is a little bit, you know, cooler. I guess the cave would work, but I just thought the Nemertine thing was a little bit strange because they tend to live in water more than anything. The deleted scene version, which I said was, where is it? The acanthocephalon. I thought that would have been a neat thing to say because it's a human parasite. It's like some kind of worm that, you know, feeds off of humans. That would have fit perfectly, I think, because Nemertines don't live off of humans. But the acanthocephalon, they do live off humans. They're a human parasite. So that would have made more sense, I think, scientifically. I mean, I'm not a scientist, but I think, to me, that makes more sense.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to gauge exactly what it really could be. I don't know. It burrows through the ground. You know, mm-hmm. It obviously doesn't live in water, but it does eat people. I don't know. Yeah, this is a freak experiment. I think that's all the explanation we need, really.
Exactly.
That's why we only get the 30 seconds explanation from Judy.
Exactly.
But yeah. But, you know, in the meantime, Wade is hitting it off with Parker, and he owns the diner. It's pretty much her, like, she's the first one to uncover the truth, because
right,
she pretty much, like, follows them to their lair where they're sucking up the blue goo. Mm-hmm. Or the gift. So she's the one who gets in trouble. Again, it's going back to that whole thing about how, like, Wade meets somebody and, like, they're swooning over her. We've kind of been talking about that the last few episodes.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah. It's either her or Quinn.
Yeah, and the messages in time, people were calling it out as well, so.
What I was thinking, and, like, because this was weird when Parker brought Wade in, the desk clerk at the hotel, like, was really upset. And, like, they never really explored why she was upset. I felt like she was jealous of Wade. Like, I don't know if there was something between her and Parker or not. I don't know what was going on there, but there was some kind of jealousy going on there, I thought.
Well, I guess after 100 years, I don't know, maybe they had something at some point.
Mm-hmm. Could be, yeah.
Trudy was getting old.
Exactly.
No offense to Trudy.
Trudy's a fine, handsome woman.
But yeah, so, like, Arturo was, like, fed to the beast, but, hey, luckily, he was just taken away and cocooned.
Just cocooned. Just cocooned.
Yeah, because it's laying eggs and stuff. So I guess it makes sense, like, once you explain it. But...
Yeah, storing up some food. But that's quite lucky. Yeah. The thing that was strange was when they go in, they find him, Quinn looks at him and says, Max,
mm-hmm.
which was the weirdest thing. I like at first I was like, what? What did he just say? And like he calls him by his first name, which he's never done. I don't believe he's ever done that in the whole series.
I don't think any of them have ever called him Max.
Yeah,
they
I don't think so.
They always refer to him either as Professor or Arturo.
Yeah.
Or Professor Arturo.
Yeah. I don't know why they made that choice there or he made that choice. Like I would expect him to totally look up and say Professor, you know, something like that.
Honestly, I think the Laurie character was maybe a bit underdeveloped as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because by the time, like, they're going in there and she gets captured and stuff, I was like, yeah, whatever. And then they immediately save her anyway. So I was like, yeah, she's not the best character. Hey, at least she didn't slide with them at the end.
Exactly.
Again, they're offering it up. Like, it's
right.
Just a free ride to wherever, as if they're going to be together forever.
Yes.
But, Yeah. I had no thought in my mind that she would ever go with them.
No.
And even if she did, like I said, she would have ended up with Ryan and Henry the dog and Flamingo.
Exactly. So then we also have we have more crimes of CGI in this episode.
Oh, man. This was worse. Worse than that scarab from last week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the sheriff is shooting at the snake, at the creature, and he's shooting at the ground. Like, it's not even aimed at the snake at all. He's just shooting the ground, you know, like, that's going to scare the snake off or something. But, of course, it's just the positioning and everything. But, yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yeah. I just, because the snake comes up and, like, pretty much grabs, like, a cardboard cutout. That sort of like wobbles up and tilts to the side as it's dragged down. I was just like, God, man, that is shoddy. That's shoddy for 1997.
Yeah.
It was just terrible. I couldn't believe it.
It's like, oh, guys, you didn't learn from the scarab. This is, don't do that. I mean, when you use the CGI for things like clouds and little special effects like that, it's good. But trying to create actual creatures on maybe, you know, a TV show budget, you know, at least their TV show budget is not a good idea.
Mm. I did like the look of the creature, though, honestly.
It was like, very snake-like.
Yeah, once it came out, it had an interesting look to it. Because all we'd really seen of it was that it, you know, it creates that tunnel thing as it travels through the ground,
right?
And it's like, and then on the seismograph thing that they're carrying around, it just looks like a wiggly line,
right.
So you kind of think that it's just going to be like a big worm or something like that. So when it comes up and it's got like a big sharp teeth and like you said, very snake like I thought it looked a bit interesting.
I suppose I was kind of disappointed by it because I'm like, oh, it's just a big snake. You know, like I wanted something more exotic, like something that looked like freaky, like a big, like not like a snake like head with eyes, but like something maybe even without eyes, maybe like a worm, but like a worm that has like a huge open maw, like a circular maw with like, you know, sharp teeth inside of it. Just like sort of like the Sarlacc pit from Return of the Jedi, something like that. But like attached to like a worm.
I was gonna say like the creatures in Tremors, you know. I think
exactly.
What they call
exactly.
Graboids.
Right, the graboids.
They were cool looking. Yeah, and practical.
Why not go all the way? You know, just really make it a tribute. Yeah. You know? Anyway, well,
In any case, yeah, it was all right. It was all right. So at the end, we get Quinn going off, and Lori's like, you know, here, would you take Michael's watch? Would you wear it? You know, and he's like, it would be an honor. I'm like, really? Why would it be an honor? You don't even know Michael. I mean, I'm sure he's a great guy, but he's just a guy. You know, it's like, why would it be an honor to wear his watch? You barely know this woman anyway.
Oh, well, it's giving him something to trade if they ever find themselves in a...
on Waterworld or Desert World. This takes batteries. We don't have those around here. Maybe this should have aired before that, you know? That would explain the watch.
Yeah. But yeah, all in all, I mean, it was a cool story. I kind of like the story, but...
This one, like I've like I said, I like to read a lot of reviews, and this one is like reviled by so many people. Like there's a page that listed like just all the inconsistencies with this episode, and there was like a ton of like 100 or so things wrong about this episode. I think it's linked on earthprime.com. I can't remember, but yeah, it's like, oh, it was not good. Not good.
Now it's time for another episode of Sassy Comebacks with Wade Wells.
I can't help but noticing that we might be outnumbered.
I can't help noticing we might be dinner.
This has been another episode of Sassy Comebacks with Wade Wells.
Okay, so let's get into our second episode today. The Last of Eden, written by Joseph Anderson, directed by Alan Eastman. And this originally aired on March 28th of 1997.
I need your help. I need tools, shovels, whatever you have to dig with.
Who are you? Where did you come from, out there?
My friend's been buried alive. Help me dig her out.
Nobody digs the earth.
She'll die down there.
Then that is her fate.
Isn't this the law where you live?
No!
It is the law here. Keegan, maybe we should help him.
No! The Janir said, don't dig the earth, don't go beyond the valley. You've been warned.
We begin with Wade waking from a nightmare about a great horror on a previous slide and Remy coaxing her to talk about it. On that slide, our group arrives to see a group of people armed with sticks and spears in the distance. No sooner do they start to approach than an earthquake occurs, the ground opening up, swallowing up one of the natives and her baby and Wade, before the ground closes back up again. The guys try to dig through the ground, getting no help from the natives except for Brock, the brother of the native woman who fell below. They manage to lower Quinn through an old industrial access tunnel, but the other natives come back and cut the rope suspending Quinn, punishment for breaking the law and traveling to the forbidden zones below. Quinn wanders the maze of pipes and walkways, following Wade's wet footprints, not seeing the agile, monkey-like humanoid creatures jumping around behind him, tracking him. Meanwhile, Remy and Arturo, seen as old ones, are taken prisoner, their rashes from falling into a thorny plant on their slide in getting worse. As Brock tries to help them, Keegan, the man in charge, tries to stop them, explaining that the old ones left and that they aren't needed anymore, but Brock counters that the ground continues to shake more and more every year and that they do need the old ones. Unable to contain scratching his skin off, Arturo asks Remy to knock him out before Brock returns with medicine for their rashes, curing them. Remy reveals that he knows something has been wrong with Arturo for some time, and Arturo admits to his incurable illness. Wade, meanwhile, searches for the baby, the mother dead, from the fall below. She finds the baby being cradled by one of the underground dwellers, and as Quinn finally catches up to her, more underground dwellers appear and surround them. An earthquake gives them the cover they need to grab the baby and make a run for it, but are eventually overcome and captured. Remy heads underground to find his friends, and they are all reunited, narrowly avoiding capture by the creatures. They hide out before attempting to reunite with Arturo, who has been confronted by the above-ground dwellers again. Upon Quinn and company's attempt to go back above ground, they are attacked. Wade, Brock, and the baby escape while Quinn and Remy hold the creature off, eventually pushing the creatures back enough to allow them to reach the surface. Keegan attempts to explain how all who broke the law will die, but Brock and our sliders convince him that there is a city below, and because of the earthquakes, the above-ground world will fall below too, just as it had years and years ago, trapping people below who eventually adapted and became the below-ground creatures. A group of natives decide to follow Brock to a new world, safe from the quakes, and our sliders slide, while Keegan goes to inspect the well and finds himself face-to-face with an underground creature, the two lock arms, battling as the scene cuts to black.
You should eat something. Brock said it will help you heal faster.
Where is he? I'm anxious to get after Quinn and Wade.
Said he wouldn't be long. It's good. Tastes like apples.
I really fancy a piece of steak myself. It is steak. This is extraordinary. Anything that you can think of, it tastes like. Try it.
Cheeseburger. It does. How did he do that?
I don't know. They must have been remarkable engineers.
Okay, so let's get into some trivia here. Now, you've got a bit of a list here, but I just thought it might be good to have a bit of a discussion about how this came after the professor's death.
Because it was supposed to air before, but then they wanted to have the next two episodes, Exodus, air at a certain time. Like I think it was during sweeps is what they wanted.
Right.
So they had to move that up. And so this episode, you know, obviously wouldn't have made sense. So they had to, you know, frame it with this flashback scene in the very beginning.
Yeah, and we talked about this at the end of the last episode about how it was a flashback. And it, honestly, I thought it was more of a flashback than it was.
Right, me too. I did as well. Because it's just that one scene.
Yeah, it seems that they just shot the one scene of Wade and Remy and her dream flashing back to it.
Now, that actually comes up in the trivia here. Actually, I'll tell you right now. Originally, they were going to come back to Wade and Remy at the end of the episode for the flashback. And Wade was like crying, and she says to Remy, you know, I hope the professor knew how much we loved him. And Remy says something like, oh, he did. And then they fade out, and that's the end of the episode. So they were going to come back to it. And they apparently they filmed it. They filmed all that extra stuff, but they just cut it out.
So, you know, as it sits, watching it in order, as we're doing, it actually kind of does sit pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it's not weird, you know, because, we'll talk about that in a discussion. We'll get to that.
All right. Some more trivia.
All right. So, there's a lot of extra lines, you know, when Wade falls down, she starts exploring. She's basically talking to herself, you know, as she explores this world. Nothing real major. There was extra lines from Remy and Arturo. They're talking about a subway, you know, and Brock's like, what's a subway? And it's like, oh, it's something that Argeneers made, you know. Nothing major. The neat thing, what they were going to do originally was when Quinn came down the first time and he looks and he sees all those pipes, he was supposed to see more than just pipes. He was supposed to see like a silhouette of a city underground. Like he was supposed to see an actual city, not just what looked like, you know, walkways and metal pipes everywhere. But I guess, I don't know, for whatever reason, they couldn't Photoshop that in. So Arturo calls out, you know, about his, rash that he has. He actually says, you know, look at this. I've got thorns growing out of, you know, my skin. And Remy says that he notices the same thing on his skin. Thorns are coming out. The idea was that they were actually going to be turning into plants. That's how that plant that they fell into, that's how that plant reproduces and spreads. It, you know, scratches you or, you know, you get hit with the thorn and then you become one of those plants, which is a neat idea. But, I mean, I guess, like, budget-wise, effect-wise, they couldn't do much.
And that's kind of where I leapt to with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, because it seemed that everything there was engineered.
Right.
That, you know, some things had glitches or something like that.
So, yeah.
You get cut by this thorn and it slowly changes your DNA or something.
So there was evidence, more evidence down below of the creatures making various nests, not just like hanging out like the one creature was with the baby, but actually like, you know, making nests and bundling up, I guess, like material to make it look like a home. Quinn was going to see a sign that said, horizontal is death, vertical is life. Apparently referring to the syzygy of the planets. So it made a reference to like, you know, when the planets are aligned in syzygy, It causes these tremors. That's why when they're in like horizontal alignment, it's death. So they have to not be in alignment and then they can live. Something like that. There was an apology before the slide where Arturo says to Remy, you know, I should have told you. I am sorry. I will tell Wade, you know, but the doctor said that I could slide up to the very end. You know, it wasn't, you know, a major big deal. And then he turns to Quinn. He says, you know, I am very touched that I have such, you know, great friends that care about me. You know, it was just a little nice moment at the end, which it's too bad they had to cut it out. It would have been neat to see. And then, like I said, they come back to Wade and Remy at the end for the flashback, but they cut that out.
You have got to keep her quiet.
Maybe she's hungry. I can't do anything about that.
Let me see her.
What do you know about babies?
Hey, I happen to be the highest grossing babysitter in my neighborhood. Let me see her.
You change diapers?
9 seconds was my personal record. Give me the kid.
Careful.
Shh. Hey. Shh. Atta girl. Still got it.
So how much did you get?
75 cents for the first kid. 50 cents each additional head. I give them a discount if I drop the kid.
Good thing they bounce. You really like kids.
Yeah. I want to have a big family. I missed out on having a brother or sister to play with. You need somebody to share things with when you're growing up.
Yeah, I know. That's why I want to have at least 3.
I want to have 5.
5? Hope you like stretch marks. Why 5?
Then I'd have my own basketball squad.
And how's the great procreator gonna pay for college, huh?
Maybe I'll just give them a timer when they graduate high school and tell them to go slide for 4 years. They'd learn a lot more.
All right, well, let's get into our discussion of the episode. So yeah, at the beginning, it is structured with this flashback motif.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as we said, this aired after the professor dies, which, I don't know, I guess we probably should have thrown out a spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't watched it, but the next 2 episodes.
I think, you know, after 20 years, if you haven't seen it, then too bad. We're not giving you a spoiler alert on that.
Yeah, and I always found it weird that this episode came after that, that they had a flashback episode that didn't have Maggie in it or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I remembered that. But honestly, I kind of remember this whole flashback thing as being a bigger thing.
Yeah, me too.
And like I said, the way it plays, it kind of does sit nicely here as, you know, the last episode before the big two-parter that is Exodus.
Yes.
It doesn't detract anything from it. Not unlike when Remy was recounting the events to the psychiatrist when they thought they had been home, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's quick, it's 30 seconds, hey, flashback, and then we get into this story back with our original 4 sliders.
Now, I mentioned this here because the last episode we had Nemertine, we had the Acampha Cephalon, whatever it was, and then now in this episode we have Quinn saying, oh, it's the syzygy of the planets. I'm like, what the heck is syzygy? I'm like, they're like these last 2 episodes, they've thrown out these big, like, complicated terms for, I don't know why, maybe to try to remind us that Quinn is really smart, you know? But he's never really done that much before, I don't remember. I mean, maybe a little bit when him and Arturo are talking, but I've never been, like, so, like, confused. I was like, well, what does that mean? I gotta look that up, you know? And syzygy just means that the planets are in alignment. Yeah, that's all it means. I just was like, I just noted that because this episode and the episode right before just had these words that I'm not familiar with, which are just, it's just odd to me.
Honestly, I didn't even remember hearing the word syzygy.
Yeah.
Until you mentioned it in the trivia just before.
Mm-hmm.
So when you mentioned it there, I thought maybe it was a word that the people who live on the planet used, mm-hmm. because they, you know, they go into the whole thing about the Geneers.
Right.
And which is derived from the word engineer, and it's like they said, it sort of just got garbled throughout time.
Right,
became this single word gin is. So when they say, when I heard syzygy, I thought maybe it was supposed to be like synergy or something like
right.
that. It was another word that got garbled in time.
Yeah, no, it's an actual thing. It's actual scientific, astronomical thing, syzygy. I was like, oh, well, I mean, it's interesting, but it just like, to me, it just stuck out. I was like, what is that? Syzygy.
It is a strange word. But the gang slide in and Remy lands in this thorn bush, right?
Yep.
And again, Wade and Quinn aren't very, like, nice about it. Just like when Arturo slid into garbage.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. Like, he's obviously, like, tangled up and yeah. being hurt. And they do nothing. They yep. laugh. And Arturo goes over to help him.
I know. It's like, what? Come on. They're friends. They shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, but they meet the locals. They've got the idea that maybe they can get in on their barbecue or whatever it is they're doing there.
Right.
And the whole earth just like opens up and swallows Wade and a local woman and a baby. So, and like the whole group of people just run away from it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, they're going to try and dig for Wade.
Well, yeah.
And stuff like that. But it looked like she fell like really far.
Yeah, digging's not going to get you down there.
Yeah, so I don't know. It didn't look very good either. It was obviously green screen again. Like,
right.
They're not doing too well with the green screen lately.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I like the fact that you were using the glow sticks, though, because I used to have those when I was a kid. Crack them, shake them, and they're glowing. I'm like, oh, look at that. I used to have those.
And it turns out, like, we get this explanation that the quote-unquote engineers...
Mm-hmm.
said that it is forbidden to dig the earth. So whenever it opens up and swallows someone, they don't go looking for these people.
Nope.
This is pretty much a tribute to the time machine.
It is. I mean, it's totally like just now when I say it's a tribute to the time machine, it's less of a tribute to the time machine by H.G. Wells and more of a time machine to the version that they like the new version that they put out like years ago starring, what's his name? Guy Pearce.
I think he was in this one. Yeah. Well, that might've come after this episode.
Yeah. That's what I'm wondering because the design of the creatures below ground are so similar to the ones that were in that version. And that version, I love the time machine, the original one, the original movie, the original book. You know, I've listened to the audio book, you know, that starred Spock, you know, Leonard Nimoy. Really, I mean, it's great, great story. But then they remade it and like they added this like head, what were they called? The Eloy and the Morlocks. They added like a head Morlock to that newer version and like he was in control of them and like he could like speak human and everything. It was like they just updated it way too much and added too much stuff to it. I just did not like it. But as I was watching this episode, like I kept waiting for that head Morlock to show up because I forgot that was from the time machine and not from the Sliders episode because the design was kind of similar to me. So, I don't know. It was just, it is definitely a time machine tribute, but I wish they had gone more with the original, you know, time machine, not that newer version.
Now, what is it that you think this planet is? Like, from the explanation we get, because they look up in the sky and they see two other Earth-like planets as right. well as a moon.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get to where Wade is, she's in like this factory type thing that's at the center of the planet.
Right.
Is this supposed to be like a planet that was built?
They
put people on it?
I have no idea. Like, I really don't know. I noticed those planets up in the sky that looked like Earth. Now, if they were Earth, and see, here's the whole thing. Someone said this, and I don't know if I put it in Messages in Time because no one really addressed it. It was just a little snippet that someone said that the planets up in the sky, if you look at it, it looks like you could see, I think it was Africa, you know, on that planet. So it looks like it's Earth up in the sky, but that's just because it's a stock photo, obviously. But story wise, like it couldn't be Earth because they are on Earth, supposedly, because they don't travel to other planets. They travel to different dimensions. So how could the Earth not be there? Like, you know what I mean? Like they're not going to another planet. And if the Earth wasn't there, is the idea that, yeah, maybe they made a planet in the same exact place as Earth? I don't know. It's weird. It's weird.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's racking my brain trying to figure it out. And it just seems that, like, at the center of the planet, where this factory thing is,
Right.
Like, maybe that's where they did, like, the day-to-day operations of the planet or something. I don't know. To make things work or something.
See, what I was thinking... See, that whole syzygy of the planets thing, you know, like, that really makes it seem very, very, like, alien, like they're on a different world. It's like, so it's, let's say it's a differently evolved world, all right? And there were these engineers, and they had some type of society, all right? They had a city, and then when the planets lined up, it started causing these earthquakes, and then from what I was thinking, from what I got, from what Quinn said and everything, that whole city that they had fell underneath the ground. And that's where some people became trapped down underneath the ground because of the earthquakes from the syzygy of the planets. That's what I was thinking. And so then, you know, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm trying to explain it. I'm like,
well,
no.
Later they talk about how, yeah, like some of them got to the surface and that's who the locals are. But right. Then some of them were trapped underground and sort of evolved into these
creatures,
pasty white creatures or something that seem to eat human flesh. It's bizarre. They don't quite explain it very well.
Now, do they eat human flesh? Is that what they said?
I think so. I think that's what they were doing. Like, whenever somebody falls in the ground, they eat them.
Okay. All right.
But they kept the baby because it's a baby.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know either. Like, I was wondering if they were, cause like, so the creatures never come up out of the ground till the very end.
I don't know. There was that opening scene where they seem to be like jumping around in trees or something. So it seems like they come up every now and again and then the locals fight them and they just go back on the ground.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I was like at the end when the creature was coming up, I was wondering why he was so fascinated. Like when he came up, he's looking all around him like he'd never seen this before. I don't know. I guess I'm a bit confused too.
Yeah, it's not a very well-developed story. I actually don't even think this episode is shot very well. There's a lot of shots where it just seemed to be like going in and out of focus or something.
Okay.
I don't know. It's like they really just like skimped the budget on this one and got the
right.
bare bones, lowest end cinematographer and cheapest writer and threw something together. It just, yeah, it really threw me off.
I don't know. The Time Machine is a great story. You know, I really like the whole idea of like the peaceful upper, you know, people and then the barbaric, you know, underground people. And this is, I don't know, like the upper people here were not exactly completely peaceful either. You know, they hunted. They said they hunted the creatures below for food. I'm like, really?
Yeah. Again, I'm like, so they're all cannibals?
Yeah. So I didn't get that either. I'm like, what the heck?
But they do at least meet one nice guy.
Yes.
Brock,
who, by the way, has a Jedi braid. Did you notice that?
I did notice that.
I'm like, what's up with that? Wow.
Two years before episode one.
Years before that.
But yeah, so he seems at least nice enough, you know, because they immediately attack him. And they say, you are going to help us. You're going to get us digging equipment. We're going to get down there. And then he's immediately like, you don't have to threaten me. I will help you. Yeah. That was my sister and my niece that went down there. So
exactly.
Stakes are high for Brock as well.
Brock.
And it turns out that there's this ventilation shaft that Quinn can go down. But then there's like the head of the local group.
Keegan. Yes.
Keegan. And he's just a douche.
he is.
he needs to follow the letter of the law, which is apparently you don't dig the earth and so on and so forth. There's right. no old people there because they all left looking for a better place. And his rationale is that, well, they never came back, so they must be dead. Yes. Or maybe they just didn't like you because you're a douche. And they found somewhere better and stayed there.
There you go.
Again, it's not going to be explained to us, so whatever.
Right.
Okay, so this is where we get into, like, Arturo and Remy trying to bounce off each other about, like, what's going on here with the planet. And they deduce that the engineers, which is supposed to be engineers,
right.
I guess built the planet. Like, that's where I'm getting my built the planet
right,
idea
yeah.
from. Like, this is not an actual planet. This was engineered, right?
It makes sense. Yeah, it does make sense when you think about it. So yeah, I guess it's possible they could have built the whole planet. Maybe something happened to Earth, or maybe the Earth for some reason was off its orbit, and that's Earth up there in the syzygy line or whatever, and they built this planet to replace it. I don't know why they would do that, but they did.
Anyway, Remy and Arturo are captured, right? And they're starting to get rashes from being scratched by the thorns. And like you said, like it looked like thorns were coming out of Arturo's arms. And I thought it was great where it was just to the point of agony for him that he needs Remy to knock him out.
Right.
And he demands that Remy punch him in the face and knock him out. At which point, like, as soon as he's knocked out is where Brock comes in with the, the magic healing waters.
Yes. If you just waited.
If Brock
had just
shown up a minute earlier, yeah. And, yeah, and this is where we start getting, like, all the stuff about how pretty much everything was engineered, you know? We've got the healing water that the engineers made for us. And then there's this fruit that tastes like whatever you want it to taste like. I thought this was probably the best part of the episode, actually, just seeing all these things that the engineers had created for the planet.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And it's not just like all mechanical stuff, so that, you know, they're into the whole botany, you know, the plants and everything. I like the idea of the fruit that tastes like whatever you want. It's like, oh, look at this, it tastes like a steak, you know? Oh, it's a cheeseburger. But you know what? What about the texture? Because it's still, like, it's that, it looks like a citrusy type fruit, like an orange or something like that. It may taste like a steak, but you don't have that texture of the steak, you know, like on your mouth, on your tongue. It's still that citrusy type texture. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It may taste like it, but it's not, like, the texture is not there. So maybe, I mean, if you're just going by taste, I guess that's fine, but there's something to be said about texture of food as well, the way it feels in your mouth.
But, you know, it does lead to a great scene where Remy confronts Arturo about his illness.
Right.
Because this is the whole thing about how Brock says, like, he must have already been pretty ill for it to hit him this hard. Mm-hmm. And then Remy pretty much lays out that he has been onto him since pretty much the beginning, because he says, you know, there was that thing with Quinn and his younger self, and I knew something was off at that point. That is the episode where we found out he was dying. So
yes,
pretty much from the get-go, Remy has been onto him, but he hasn't said anything. Like, he's not just going to throw it in his face or something like that. So I think it's great for Remy's character that he was aware of what was going on. You know, he's not a bumbling idiot. He is a strong character. At the same time, it's, like I said, it's a great scene between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Gets out a lot of explanation between Remy and Arturo trying to explain. But the whole time, Arturo has that fruit in his hand. Mm-hmm. And he's just flinging it all over the place while he's talking. It was so distracting. And then it ends with him, like, plonking it on the table, and it just, like, slides off.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that.
And I was just like, man, that was just so distracting.
I do recall that now that you mentioned it. I'm like, yeah, that's all right. I remember that part. Hmm. Weird. Weird choice. Then, so now we have Remy and Arturo, but we also have Quinn and Wade, who are paired up. And they start talking about children, which, you know, Quinn apparently is not just a record tire changer holder. He's also a record diaper changer, you know, like he can change diapers like that. Is another yet untapped ability of his. But yeah, they start talking about children, which was just, I mean, I know there's a baby there involved and everything. It just seemed like, I don't know, they use these tense situations where they start talking about things, like in The Fire Within. She's like, I want a baby, you know, and now they're being pursued by these, like, you know, creatures. It's like, let's talk about kids. Let's take a moment. Let's talk about kids. It just seems out of place to me.
Yeah, and honestly, I started seeing Quaid again. Like, I thought they were going to go there. They're talking about having kids, and Wade's like, you know, I want to have three kids. And Quinn says, oh, you know, I want to have five, and that way I can have my own basketball school.
Yeah,
I thought
that
was really good. But I really thought it was going to, you know, get to, you know, maybe like going in for a kiss and get interrupted, or just like in Last Days, full on make out and then someone comes in and interrupts.
Right.
But no, they steer away from it. They just have this discussion about kids and family. And I love that he says, you know, maybe, you know, my kids can inherit the timer and I'll tell them to go and slide for 4 years. I'll learn a lot more. It was really good. But
yeah,
they don't go into Quaid territory, really.
No.
And this is pretty much, you know, we start getting more with these underground humanish cannibals.
Right. You know, they're not, like, these cannibals are not exactly, I thought, like, when they first started and they're tracking, you know, Quinn, I thought they were pretty smart. I was like, oh, look at there. You know, they're coming up behind him. They're not being seen by him. But at the end there, they're kind of dumb and they're kind of weak. They're not very strong. Because as they, try to escape from them along with Remy, you know, Remy and Quinn stay back and they start hitting them. And it doesn't look like they're hitting them very hard and they're not being chased after very quickly. Like they're able to get away pretty good. They just, and then when they get close, they turn around, punch them and they run again. Turn around, punch them, they run again. It's like, yeah,
throw some rocks at them.
Yeah. You know, it's like I was expecting these guys, like the way they were moving earlier, so acrobatic. I thought they were going to be a little bit stronger and like they would just be surrounding them like this huge horde of these creatures, you know, and like an almost impossible situation. How are they going to get out of it? But no, it was a very like basic chase scene, just like a couple creatures after the two of them. It was like kind of a letdown for me.
You know, with the explanation that we're given about how it was just like some people were trapped in the facility underground where, you know, other people made it to the top, they're mm-hmm. pretty much derived from the same species of human.
Right, right.
So, I mean, like up on the surface, it was like, well, the word Janeer was a bit right. garbled over time. Why don't the people underground have language?
Right.
Did they just
yeah.
stop teaching language at some point? I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah. And like, they don't really say how long it's been for them. But I mean, like, in the time machine story, like, it was like, what, hundreds of thousands of years that he went yeah. forward, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He gets knocked out. Sense. He hits the controls and ends up like 100,000 years in the future.
Yeah, it makes sense that they would evolve the way they did in that story because it's been hundreds of thousands of freaking years, you know? So it really does make sense. But in here, it's like, how long has it been? You know, like if time is always the same, if time is constant amongst the dimensions, it hasn't been, you know, like hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah, and then the episode ends pretty openly.
Right, right.
As well, you know, they slide away and then one of the underground humanish creatures is coming up and you think they're gonna fight, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, do you think, like, I think they're gonna fight, and I think Keegan could win because they're not that strong, you know, like as we just saw. And like, obviously, you know, Keegan is I know he's a douche, but he seems like he's, you know, a leader for a reason. So maybe he was the strongest or the smartest for whatever reason. He's actually probably not the smartest, but you know, there's going to be something that he's, you know, can offer to that whole tribe. And like when they go to fight, like he probably has a pretty good chance against this one. You know, if more came out, maybe not. But like these creatures, like I said, I was let down by how easily they were beaten by Remy and Quinn. Just like, you know, a couple punches, some rocks, and you're done. You're good. You're out of there.
Well, and like I said, like I thought they came up to the surface quite often. So they kind of made it out as if like this thing coming out of the, you know, a ventilation shaft was like a big deal or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, they come up all the time though, right?
I don't know. That's what confused me. Like I didn't remember them being in the trees or anything. I just blanked that out. And yeah, when he came up at the end, it was like this huge thing. He was amazed. Like this creature is like looking around, like, what is this? And then he sees Keegan. He's like, oh, you know, who is this? And then boom, they're, you know, they're locked in an embrace to, you know, fight or whatever. I don't know. I would like to think, because Keegan is such a, you know, an idiot, that he would die, you know, he would get killed by him. But like, I think he had a pretty good chance.
But all in all, it's a pretty weak episode for me.
Yeah. It's not, definitely not one of my favorites. Not, you know, it's not the, like, I enjoyed this one. I want to say I enjoyed it more than Paradise Lost. just slightly, you know, but they're, you know, they're definitely not the best offerings that Sliders has ever given us.
You wouldn't listen to me, would you? You came to the forbidden place.
But you said this man was dead.
I guess he was wrong.
All of you who disobeyed will die, and you'll all die if you stay here. We will not leave this valley. You must leave this place. I don't know what's out there, but you can't stay here. Look, there's another city below you. And one day this will all fall down.
It's true. I saw it with my own eyes.
Those creatures you hunt, they live underground. I think they were like you once, but they got trapped below when the Janeers relocated everyone.
We must leave. And who will come with me?
Don't you understand? You will all die! I'm telling you, there is nothing out there!
Quinn, will you come with us?
We're going in a different direction.
Come with us, Keegan. We do not go beyond. We do not open the earth. Those are the rules.
Not anymore. Goodbye.
All right. Well, let's get into some messages in time.
All right. So we'll start with this one first, Eden. And there's not too much here that I could find about it. What they, what one person said was, syzygy of planets is dumb because they should have said the moon being closer to the earth because that would have thrown off tides and a lot more, you know, like that would have affected the world much more than just the planets being aligned is what they said. Which, you know, I guess I don't know much about it, but I know the moon affects the tides and things like that. So that maybe that would have been a better way. They theorized that it was the technology of the Geniers that turned the people down below into those creatures. And that's why they couldn't talk or they didn't have language and it looked so different after just a couple of years. For some reason, they stuck on to 20 years or so. I don't know where the number 20 came from. I don't know if that was in the episode, but they said maybe it was the tech of all the what the engineers were doing that mutated the people who got trapped down below into those creatures. It's a theory. It's a good theory. And then people were confused when this one aired because it aired after his death. So when they saw it in the TV guide, you know, and the description was something like, Professor Arturo becomes gravely ill, you know, at this, during this slide, da, da, da. And people were like, what? How can he died? What's going on? So yeah, they were just a little confused by that description.
And like I said, it interrupts what they're doing, you know, trying to develop the Maggie character as well. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, like it does.
Her whole thing, you know, to just cut away to a story that just doesn't include her.
I mean, I remember when it came on and I was like, oh, the professor. I'm like, that's cool. And like, I saw it was a flashback and I was like, cause I was glad. Cause I was sad that the professor had died. You know, I was like, man, that sucks. And then it's like, oh, he's back. You know, it's like, oh, it was a flashback. Well, okay. I'll take it.
As we're watching it in order, I think it's going to be better that, you know, he has his big death
and that's
of course
it.
We'll talk about how we feel about it when we get to it.
Right.
But
exactly.
It's a fitting farewell.
Right.
For Arturo and John Rhys Davies. And to have this random flashback for, like I said, what I don't think is a very good episode.
No.
Yeah.
So that's it for the messages in time for the Eden. But let's go to messages in time from Paradise, which we actually have a lot more. As you surmised, a lot of people were talking about how this was just a ripoff of, or sorry, tribute to Tremors. You know, it's just so obvious. Someone pointed out about Laurie. And I had not really paid much attention to it, but they were talking about Laurie's skirt, you know, because here she is, this geologist wearing this short skirt. And when she's in the diner, she like moves a certain way to position herself. And like you could like you see her cleavage. I'm like, I didn't notice that. I'm like, I got to go back. But I didn't notice that. But other people obviously did. Did you notice it?
I guess I just took it at face value. I didn't really think about it.
Yeah, I had no idea until they mentioned it. It's the same thing like with the last episode with the Egyptian one where they mentioned Apollonia being, a wet dream for boys. I'm like, really? Like, well, I guess so. She's attractive, I guess. It was just weird. let's see. They commented on Arturo's dialogue when he was being taken underground, you know, and he's like, confound you. It's like, oh, that's bad dialogue.
That actually did stick out a bit. Yeah. Confound you. I was like,
right.
Really?
They were wondering why the postman wasn't eaten or taken to a cocoon. He was just left there dead in the one scene. Mm. They made a comment about the magic rifle of Remy's that doesn't seem to be reloaded. It just keeps firing as much as he wants, which some people have said, well, you know, they did a bunch of cutaways. Maybe he reloaded during those cutaways, which, yeah, makes sense. Just little nitpicks. Someone said, very funny, he was like, you know what? I think Ed Wood is still alive and writing Slider scripts. It's like, yeah, yep, I can see it.
I can see it. And again, they were talking about Trudy. Like, yeah, let's leave the old lady around so she can tell everyone what's going on in the town. You know, let's not get rid of her. Let's keep her.
Yeah.
Someone said, you know what? The old West world and the world run by the 30-somethings and the desert world were a lot sillier than this world. I was like, no. No, they were not. Never. They were not. Not at all. Someone said, you know what? This was better CGI on the snake than the scarab, which... Like you said, no. Nope.
I disagree.
Definitely not. People were talking about how they discovered the youth crap. You know, like, how did they know to eat that? You know, it's like, again, we don't know. I bet, you know what? I bet you it was Bud, you know, being the redneck guy. He's like, oh, I'm real hungry. Let me try some of that, you know. Boy, Bud, you're looking younger today. It's like, well, I've been eating this stuff.
I've been eating worm crap.
People were glad that, they were using the Egyptian timer. Like, they kept the continuity going. They just didn't forget about it. Like, they mentioned it. So that was good. They were glad that, okay. JP Newbold is the guy who made this post. JP, I don't want to say I hate you, but I dislike you. He made a post and he said, you know what? You know what? I'm glad this wasn't a weird world. You know, where something in history was different. This was a very good episode for the genre. It reminded me of the X-Files. You know, I'm like, J.P. Newbold. Ugh. No, you're so wrong. This is not a good episode for Sliders. You know, it's not a good representation of the genre. This would make a perfect episode, like he just said, of the X-Files. Perfect episode for the X-Files, not for Sliders. Someone else said, and this goes right along with it, if you take the Sliders out of this story, nothing changes. The story is still the same. You could have a group of four experts that come into town, and the story is exactly the same. There's nothing really offered by the Sliders that makes it a Sliders story.
Yeah.
You know, and I gotta agree with him. You know, I'm like, yeah, that's right. You know, and like even like the opening scene where the Sliders aren't even in it. It's just this geologist, Michael, you know, that's the perfect opening of like most X-Files episodes where there's some guy and he discovers something and then he gets killed. And then here come Mulder and Scully.
Yeah. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Anyway. So and then we have Seth Argabright is his name. I'm like, oh, I like this guy. He says, no. Give this to Chris Carter for the X-Files. I want alt history and dimensions where things have differed in history. I'm like, yeah, yes, you go, yes. Seth. That's my boy.
Yes, Seth.
Now, here's something I didn't know. Someone mentioned this in one of the threads that apparently Baywatch Nights. Remember Baywatch Nights?
Yeah.
I barely remember. I never watched it. But apparently Baywatch Nights did a parallel universe episode that same week that this aired. So
I don't remember that.
See, I'm gonna try to find it because I want to know how did they do a parallel universe episode on Baywatch Nights?
I mean, it was a show about lifeguards.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think there was any science fiction in there.
Exactly. Wow. So I don't know how they do it, but someone mentioned that they did some kind of alternate universe thing, and I'm like, huh, well, that's interesting. I'll have to check that out. And then they mentioned the war between the U.S. and Canada. Maybe it was a way of trying to work in some alt history, but it's like, that had nothing to do with the story. It had no impact on anything that was going on. It was just there, like in a line. I'm like, all right, well, whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, that, you know, it, yeah, I don't know. These people are on point, except for J.P. Newbold.
All right, so messages from Earth Prime. We don't really have any.
Not much. There has been some discussion over on the forums at sliders.tv if you want to check it out. They go off a little bit into Dawson's Creek discussion. But yeah, you know, it's pretty active over there. So get over there, participate.
All right. Well, next week's episode, we're discussing Exodus parts 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very much looking forward to this. We've pretty much brought it up like every episode for season 3.
Yeah.
On a trek to this big two-parter, and
this is where it all changed, you know? This is where it all changed.
So that should be very exciting.
Alrighty, well, that is it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. Keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod. You can also visit our webpage at rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com, which has some of our favorite links there, such as dimensionofcontinuity.com, which actually I've been saying wrong all this time. It's not dimensions of continuity, it's dimension of continuity. continuity, so I apologize. I wonder where I have to type dimensionsofcontinuity.com and see where that takes me. To an alternate universe. All right. We go. Also got earthprime.com, some great reviews and guides over there. And, of course, the active form we mentioned over at sliders.tv.
And remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. And we don't really get voice messages, but really, I'd like to push it. Feel free to, you know, just use your computer's microphone. It doesn't matter what it sounds like. You can sound like crap, but
right.
We'd love to hear from you guys. As much as we'd love to get email and your feedback and stuff like that,
yeah.
You know, we can hear your voice. We can play it back.
And, the iPhone microphone, the like little audio app that comes with it, it's actually pretty good. It's not too bad. So you can even record right on there, and you can email it, you know?
Exactly. Just attach it to an email and send it on over. That'd be so awesome. And also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. It really does just take a minute. You can click 5 stars, let everybody know that we're awesome and you love the show.
Yes. Exactly.
All right. Thank you for joining me, Tom.
Of course.
So until next time, I'll just say I am faxing you copies of some weird seismic activity.
Yes, we got a slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.